Doktor, assalamualaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh.
Waalaikumsalam warahmatullahi wabarakatuh. How are you, Habibi?
Alhamdulillah, and yourself?
Alhamdulillah, I got my scuba diving suit on at the moment, raring to go.
Burkinis are not allowed. Halima Bai is going to enforce the ban. Story that caught your eye this week.
Well, Maulana, almost on a daily basis, there are many loony people in the world doing many loony things. The world is full of BDD individuals. Of course, you know that means Badam Dude Deprived. While they were growing up, their mothers didn't give them this very vital brain food. Hence, they are prone to doing silly things. But let me begin by saying that it is taught to us that we should eat our food using our fingers, meaning, of course, well, using our hands, right? It is sunnah to do so, and, of course, we do it very well. Just two or three fingers with a little roti, no mess, no fuss. We do it all very daintily. Food is said to be more tasty if it's eaten in this way. But these days, of course, because of frequent eating at restaurants and so on, there's an increasing tendency to use forks and knives. Sometimes people abandon the knife and just use a fork when eating rice or pasta and so on. So let's go to Amritsar in India. A 42-year-old policeman, no name given, is not eating his food with his fingers. Actually, he's not even using a fork. In fact, he's not even eating his food. He's eating his knife. It's true, this Ullu has been eating knives over the period of the last 2 months, and so far he has swallowed over 40 knives. Listen to this. The man underwent a successful 5-hour operation to remove the knives from his stomach in the northern city of Amritsar after complaining to doctors of severe abdominal pain. He said, "I don't know why I did it, but there was some spiritual power behind it. It started in June when I swallowed the first knife and I enjoyed the feeling. It soon became a habit." Doctors said they initially thought the father of two was suffering from a tumor after body scans showed a large solid mass. But on further investigation, they discovered dozens of folding knives with metal and wooden handles and measuring up to 18 centimeters unfolded. Rajinder Rajan, one of the surgeons at Corporate Hospital, said, "We immediately prepared him for surgery and removed the knives. There was bleeding as some of them were unfolded." Rajan said he suspected the patient who told doctors he passed, listen to this, he told doctors he passed two more knives in his tools.
Whoa.
The doctor said this guy had mental health problems. He was recovering well from Friday's surgery but would undergo a psychological assessment before being discharged from hospital. But the man said he would not do it again. I consumed a knife a day for about 2 months. I never felt that it was going to harm me, but when it pained, I came to the hospital. I will not repeat it. I am glad they saved my life, and I want to go back to my family. Now, Maulana, uninformed reports that I received say that after the operation, the man was asked how he felt, and he answered, "Sharp, sharp." So, dear ladies, here's a word of caution. If you find that some of your cutlery is missing, don't blame the maid. Take your hubby for a checkup. You never know what he could be hiding.
Ouch.
And finally, the Committee for Determining Who is Severely BDD Deficient has come to the unanimous conclusion the policeman from Amritsar is the unchallenged Mambara of the week.
Yeah, I wonder if he took it with sauce.
Yeah.
Don't try it. It's beyond your...
Yeah, some onion rings on the side.
Huh?
Maybe add some onion rings on the side also.
No, I'm saying you shouldn't try it. You're not young enough to survive it.
You're starting with me, Maulana?
No, I'm just giving some well-intended advice.
Thank you for your well-intended advice.
Okay. Now, let's talk about the burkini.
What is a liberal democracy? What is a liberal democracy? In simple terms, it means a system in which people are allowed maximum freedoms. South Africa is regarded as a liberal democracy, meaning that you are free to live your life as you wish, as long as it does not impact negatively on other people. That basically what liberal means, maximum freedom. Not complete freedom, of course, because you could cause offense to others by your behavior. So, let's go to France. It regards itself as a liberal democracy based on the principle laissez-faire, meaning secularism. Therefore, it has maximum freedoms. For example, two men kissing in the street, that's fine. You shouldn't be offended. People showing their bums and breasts on the beach, not an issue. Even total nudity is fine. It's freedom. It's liberal. It's laissez-faire. No one should be offended if such nudity is in your sight. You know, if you're looking and you see this nudity, you shouldn't be offended. But the sight of a woman covering her body is a no-no. It is hurtful to the sensitive eyes of the French. They have to carry large bottles of hygiene because the clothing of Muslim women seriously hurts their eyes. And, of course, it offends them. They suffer terribly from this onslaught. Seeing a woman covered up makes them bilious. Some even have heart attacks. Did you know that? Of course, I'm just mocking this nonsense charge that a woman dressed modestly is offensive. What a load of bull excrement. Modesty is bad. Nakedness is good. Ah, yes. If you are in France, then you must assimilate. You must adopt French values and be completely integrated into French values, French culture. Leave your culture and lifestyle where you come from. Leave it in Algeria or Côte d'Ivoire. That's Ivory Coast. I'm just showing off with my French here. But hang on. When you frogs came to Africa and conquered and occupied various parts, what did you do? Did you leave your culture and lifestyle in France and adopt and adapt the African way of life? Not at all. You imposed your culture onto those whom you conquered. French was imposed as the main language, and that is why today many parts of Africa are French-speaking, or for that matter, German or Portuguese. So don't come here with your nonsense, okay, about Muslims coming to France must abandon their way of life. Ah, yes, and there is another idiotic argument, that Islamic dress, for example, like the scarf, is a political statement. Hey, it's an expression of political Islam, as that Mampara Prime Minister of France said this week. So, the implication is this. A Muslim woman wakes up in the morning and thinks, okay, I want to make France an Islamic state. I want to bring Sharia law here. I want to push my agenda. This is war. And so I will fight this war to take over France by using a powerful weapon I have, and that is my scarf. You know, it reminds me of what Winston Churchill said about Hitler and the Germans. We will fight them on the land, in the air, and on the sea. I think Muslim women are taking a lesson from Winston Churchill and are taking their jihad to the sea. And therefore, they are taking political Islam to the beach, and the weapon of war is the burkini, whatever you want to call it. Okay, here's the question. How different is a scuba diving outfit suit that covers you from neck to ankle and also includes a head cover, very tight head cover? The answer is not much. So why have the French got their proverbial knickers in a knot? Eh? Why have they got their proverbial knickers in a knot? Well, the answer is that many French are fed up with immigrants, and in particular, its large Muslim population, many of whom started arriving in France over a century ago, mainly from North Africa, that's Morocco, Libya, Algeria, and so on. Many of them are living in poor neighborhoods. Many young people don't have jobs. There's discrimination in French society. And, of course, there's a rise in crime also. And many French seeing this community as being responsible for all this crime and so on. And, of course, the spate of bombings and shootings across France has also contributed to the white French citizens having a growing antagonism towards Muslims. And many hate seeing the scarf and the hijab, not because it is a political statement, as claimed, but because it indicates that outsiders have now taken over their country. This is a constant impression and idea that they have. Anyway, politicians, as you know, happens everywhere, have capitalized on this public resentment. Almost all of the mayors of the 26 towns that banned the burkini along the French Riviera, all these towns along the French Riviera, are from the right-wing Republic Party. And guess who else has raised his silly head? Who else has raised his silly head to focus on the burkini? Yes, folks, it's that Mampara, the former president of France, Nicolas Sarkozy. He has decided to stand for the next presidential elections. At a speech this week where he received thunderous applause from a large crowd, he said, "I refuse to let the burkini impose itself at French beaches and swimming pools. There must be a law to ban it throughout the Republic's territory. This burkini is a provocation that supports radical Islam." You know, whenever the frog croaks, you can be sure that he's talking absolute sheer nonsense. But there is some good sense prevailing. Yes, there is some good sense prevailing. And this is the former Canadian Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, defended the burkini. Of course, there's a description in this article about what it is. He said that he stood for individual rights during a meeting with his ministers on Monday. He said that Canada did not like to seize personal rights and respected cultural diversity. While speaking to the media, the Liberal Party leader addressed the controversy swirling in France over the burkini ban and said, "We should be past tolerance in Canada," he added. He added that the country could never think of a burkini ban or any kind of prohibition that would affect any person's individuality. He says, "In Canada, can we speak of acceptance, openness, friendship, understanding? It is about where we are going and what we are going through every day in our diverse and rich communities." So there's a voice of reason there. Anyway, a few final comments, Maulana. Today, the highest French court will decide whether the ban on the burkini is valid. And listen to this. The Australian woman credited with creating the burkini says, "Bans on the full-bodied Islamic swimsuit in France have boosted sales. The clothing which combines burqa with bikini leaves only the face, hands and feet on show." Aheda Zanetti, who claims the trademark on the name burkini, said online sales were up 200%. And here's something quite surprising. 40% of the sales are to non-Muslim women. So that raises quite an interesting and perhaps even an amusing question. If a Christian woman wears the burkini on the beach, can she be accused of promoting radical Islam? This whole thing is so silly. You know what I think is very offensive, Maulana? Here you are having a picnic on the beach and some fat thighs with horrible cellulose accompanied by a dangerously hanging stomach and Amazon jungle hairy armpits goes right past you. That's enough to kill your appetite for the biryani you dished out on your paper plate.
Well, your description is like you're speaking from experience.
I'm always lowering my gaze, Maulana.
Okay, the ISIS war seems to be heating up.
I said it before and I'll say it again. What do you get if you cross a Gemsbok and a horse? What do you get when you cross a Gemsbok and a horse? And the answer is, you get one hell of a chamorse, eh? That, dear listeners, is the situation in Syria and Iraq. It gets murkier by the day. And it's all got to do with shifting alliances. We don't know who is fighting whom and of course each one has got his agenda. But here is a prediction. It looks like the noose is steadily tightening around ISIS. Yes, there is a concerted effort now by a number of role players. But I said it before, I really don't know who or what ISIS is. Yes, of course, there are some very plausible and reasonably well-presented arguments about how it came about. Disgruntled and marginalized Sunnis joined up with former Ba'athist military leaders of Saddam Hussein's army who were booted out when the Americans invaded and so on. But can we say with absolute certainty that the central command, the people at the top, the inner circle, are not instruments of some outside force or power? Can we say that with absolute certainty, that ISIS was not manufactured to create instability in the region? No, we can't. Or should I say, we don't know. Yes, it has attracted many, mainly young people, with the promise of an Islamic caliphate utopia. But while in the early days many dismissed the reports of the extreme behavior of this group, such as arbitrary executions and the taking of slaves and rapes and so on, as we dismiss that as Western propaganda, it's now absolutely impossible to deny this, given the huge number of reports of increasing atrocities carried out by these groups. And these are first-hand accounts. And how can suicide bombings, where hundreds are killed and injured, I'm talking about innocent civilians, how can that be Islamic? Or how can that advance the objective of creating an Islamic state? Mindless violence is not Islamic. Okay, let's leave that and focus on the current dynamics. So, Turkey was increasingly upset with the U.S. And the final straw was the so-called Gulen coup. Most Turks believe that America had a hand in this failed attempt to overthrow Erdogan, the Turkish president. And so, Erdogan kissed and made up with Russia. You know, it was just last November that Turkey shot down a Russian jet that strayed into its airspace. Erdogan then said very loudly and defiantly, "We will shoot down anyone who comes into our territory." Of course, that doesn't apply to the U.S. planes situated or stationed at Incirlik, that is the Turkish air base near the Syrian border. Now, at that time, the U.S. was a friend of Turkey. But slowly, Erdogan realized that the U.S. has its own agenda and therefore cannot be trusted. So earlier this month, he went off to Moscow to fix the broken relationship. And it was quite broken. For example, thousands of Russians, always fill Turkey's tourist spots. Huge revenue. And Putin told his people, don't go to Turkey. So tourism dried up completely. And trade deals were also stopped. So all this had to be fixed. And on the 9th of August, Putin and Erdogan announced a resumption. Of course, Erdogan went to Moscow. A big announcement, a resumption of the annual bilateral trade target of $100 billion. And chartered flights taking Russian tourists to Istanbul will be accelerated. And there's something that surely made Washington sit up. The Turkish Prime Minister has announced that Russia can use the Incirlik air base for its jets to launch attacks on ISIS. Now that's really poking America in the eye. But wait, Russia is not really fighting ISIS. It's attacking all those who are trying to overthrow Assad. So in Turkey also, is Turkey also now changing its stance about Assad? Well, Robert Fisk thinks so. As you may remember, a wedding party was bombed in Turkey. Erdogan blamed many for this act, but not Syria. Here is what Fisk says. He says, few Turks would believe that the Syrian regime had anything directly to do with the wedding bombing, but after his jaunt to see Tsar Vladimir at St. Petersburg, Sultan Erdogan seems to realize that Turkey has really got to cut down on the number of its enemies. Syrian opposition figures in Turkey have been alarmed at reports of secret talks between Damascus and Ankara, through what the French used to call intellectuels valables, or people trusted by both sides, and an apparently stray remark by the Turkish Prime Minister just before the attempted coup and before the St. Petersburg meeting, to the effect that relations will one day have to be restored with Syria. Clearly, Erdogan's new love for Mother Russia comes at a price. The Tsar will surely have discussed his own affection for Bashar and Turkey's role in trying to crush the government which Moscow supports with its armed forces at the mutual summit. Could it be, therefore, that the Sultan is thinking of renewing his old friendship with the Lion of Damascus? Be sure he is. So, that is Robert Fisk. So Russia says it's targeting ISIS, but is attacking all militant groups fighting against Assad. Turkey says that it is attacking ISIS, but it seems to focus a great deal of attention on the Kurds, who have for a very long time wanted to take back their land, Kurdistan, part of which is in Syria, part in Iraq, and part in Turkey. So the militant Kurdish group, the YPG, which is fighting in northern Syria, hoping to get this land back as part of his homeland, is regularly attacked by the Turkish forces. Turkey obviously doesn't want the Kurds to get any land in Syria that it claims to be part of old Kurdistan. If it succeeds, then it will take land in northern Iraq, and then next will be Turkey. So, anyway, to make matters more complicated, the United States supports the YPG with arms and airstrikes. As I said, the noose is tightening around ISIS, and this week, the strategic ISIS-held town at Jarablus has fallen. As the various fighting groups move forward southwards towards Aleppo, there are going to be more attacks. But, question is, who will be attacking whom? Who will be attacking whom? There are, as I said, new alignments, new alliances. Those are those who are for Assad and those against. What's that expression? When two elephants fight, the grass suffers. Pity the long-suffering people of Syria.
Indeed. Light at the end of the tunnel.
Well, Mullen, I got a confession to make here.
Oh boy.
And that is, I don't have anything new, so I'm going to recycle some golden oldies. You may have heard some of these, but they are still good for a laugh, well, to a laugh out loudly, which I'm hoping you'll do. It's about Indian names. You know that old one which we heard over and over, what do you call an Indian astronaut? Moonsami. Well, I got a list of some new ones sprinkled in this lot here. Maulana, what do you call an Indian carpet manufacturer?
No idea.
And the answer is Ragnath. Indian who loves tablets, Finlay. Indian killer, Madare. Indian who drinks tea a lot, Kappasami. Indian boxer, Chinsami.
Chips.
Indian bank manager, Manilal. Indian man not... I like this one. Indian man, not very fair and not very dark. What's his name? Bejnath. A man serving water, Jaglal. Indian female arsonist, who like to put things on fire, Burnmati. Indian Tamil girl sitting under a lemon tree, what's her name? Savatri. Indian who likes fruit a lot, Apple Sami. Indian man in a rush, Hari Prasad. Indian acrobat, Balan Singh. Muslim cigarette smoker, Farooq. And this is a good one. Indian man who likes biscuit, Marimuthu. Okay, I got a quick last one for you.
Yeah.
Now two guys are walking through Kruger National Park and they come across a lion that has not eaten for days. The lion starts chasing the two men. They run as fast as they can. And the one guy starts getting tired and decides to say a prayer. Please, God, turn this lion into a Christian. And then he looks to see if the lion is still chasing. And he sees that lion is now on his knees, happy to see his prayer answered. He turns around and heads towards the lion. As he comes closer to the lion, he hears the lion saying a prayer. Thank you, Lord, for the food I'm about to receive.
Uncle Levy, as always, Jazakumullah for your time.
Always a pleasure, Maulana.
Assalamu alaikum.
I'd like to see you in a scuba diving outfit. That's my dream.
No, I'm following the band. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was this week's edition of the Big Picture program with AB Dowji. It's now 17 minutes to 9.